So happy that the sun is out and that you've joined the Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jisoo Yi. Appreciate you so much. Have you been driving around downtown and wondered about all the construction you're seeing, especially the construction that's new apartments? I always wonder, who's going to live in them? How much are they going to cost? And are there going to be enough people to fill all of this construction? 10,000 plus new apartments are predicted for downtown Chicago by 2022. Joining us now is Ryan Ori. He's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune covering commercial real estate. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
Fantastic to have you on the show. So how many buildings and how many apartments are going to be built?
Well, so this projection is, as you mentioned, more than 10,000 new apartments between now and the end of 2022, another several hundred condos. That aspect of the residential market has been kind of slower to come back since the recession, but that's between the two of those, you're looking at, around 11,000 new units or so.
So, Ryan, you said this is unprecedented pace of construction. Since there's going to be such a high supply of apartments, does this mean that folks living downtown or wanting to live downtown are going to eventually see a break in rent?
It would seem that way when you, as you mentioned, when you just see so much construction going on, and more than half of the, what they call Class A apartments or the highest end apartments have been built in the last 5 years, and there's a whole bunch more on the way, as we just discussed. And so you would think that that would mean, a big break in rent, but that hasn't been the case. There's still a projection of rents going up 2 to 3% a year in the next few years, despite all the new construction that's happening. And I think a lot of that's just there's been a dramatic increase in the population downtown. There didn't used to be a lot of people living downtown. It was more in the neighborhoods. And there's also just been a lot of job growth downtown with companies moving offices from the suburbs to downtown or coming to Chicago from other cities in the country.
So the appeal of downtown living is still really high. You might not know this off the top of your head, but what's the cost of an average one-bedroom apartment, especially in this new construction building?
It depends on the size of the
right
unit. There's been a lot of
here to what can it, how high can it go
for a one bedroom?
Yeah.
Depending on the size of the unit, it could be thousands of dollars for just for a one bedroom, if it's a new higher end building. And now there's a lot of buildings out there offering extremely small units,
right,
which is they build these buildings with a lot of bells and whistles throughout the building in terms of, there's a lot of
right, so
places
doing,
to hang around,
yeah,
and work
so
out
doing
and do
a
things
lot
but
you're living in community spaces,
right, so you're moving around the building, but some people aren't necessarily spending a lot of time in their actual, living area.
And there's still some challenges for landlords as well with property taxes and affordable housing requirements.
Yeah, that's one really big topic of conversation in the commercial real estate world and residential real estate world right now. Is there's an expectation that there's going to be big property tax increases. There's some other things going on in terms of policy changes that are expected under the new mayor and some other things going on. And so there's a weird dynamic right now where there's this huge amount of construction going on, there's still rents going up for these new buildings, and yet there's also sort of a little bit of a pause on buildings being bought and sold as people wait to see, as big developers wait to see how some of these cost increases that they're going to take on will play out in the next couple of years.
Well, thank you so much, Ryan Ori. He's with the Chicago Tribune. He covers commercial real estate. And sorry to throw you off on that one question. It's just that a friend of mine pays $5,000 for his one bedroom. So I know that these really fancy apartments can be really expensive monthly. So thanks so much for being with us. G here with the Wintrust to Business Lunch. Happy Friday. And in studio, joining me right now is Tom Gimbel. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network. Hi, Tom.
Hi, G. How are you?
Just remind folks what you do over there at LaSalle Network.
I do whatever my staff tells me to.
Yeah, right. You're the boss.
We are. Yeah, I do. The inmates run the asylum. We are a staffing and recruiting firm covering about 10 different practices, from supply chain to call centers to accounting and finance and...
So basically, you help employers and you help employees as well.
Yeah, we're exactly right. I mean, the companies pay us. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But we are an advocate and a conduit for people to find the right places to work.
And the whole point is that you're going to find that perfect match for the employer and the employee as well.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is you want it's. I think that hopefully the success rate is better than the divorce rate in the country, but we we're pretty good. We're good about between 88% and 94% of the time.
Oh, that's way better than the divorce rate.
Yeah, we're pretty good.
Divorce rate like 50%.
I think. Well, I'm at statistics because I'm divorced. So
okay, so we are going to be talking about this new study that was just put out, and it's from the American Psychological Association.
Sure.
They released the 13th annual Stress in America report.
Can I get the plug in on this, G? They did name us one of the healthiest companies to work for, emotionally healthy companies to work for in the United States.
Oh, well, emotionally healthy.
Yeah.
This is because you have very high emotional IQ.
It's because we acknowledge that we're all crazy and we don't try to pretend that we're sane.
Right.
And then everybody's happy.
Oh, it sounds like you have a very fun workplace environment there.
The key is laugh a lot, take the job seriously, don't take yourself seriously, and realize that there's good stress and bad stress.
Okay, so for companies that didn't make the list, American Psychological Association said that around 6 in 10 adults identify work, that's 64%, as a significant source of stress. That doesn't surprise me.
It should be.
It should surprise me?
No, it should be stressful.
Oh, it should be stressful.
Sure.
Oh, Tom, I thought we were going to be talking about how bosses can help make it less stressful.
No, what bosses can do is help you learn to manage your stress.
Oh, okay. That's learning. Yeah,
this is,
I see.
So if you surveyed parents on if raising kids is stressful, mm-hmm. I would think 9 out of 10.
Absolutely.
And the 10th would have abandoned their children. So I think it's the exact same thing you're talking about. About the aspect of your life that pays for everything else in your life, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
That should be stressful. If you lose your job, you have no money coming in. If you succeed at your job, you get paid more money and have more money coming in. If that's not a source of... Now, there's good stress and bad stress and growth and development and learning and all and balance, but it is stressful when people are depending on you. People are depending on you.
Yes.
That is in itself a stress, an emotional stressor.
And I am depending on myself to pay my bills
right,
and to do a good job.
But you have a producer that's depending on you to get good ratings. You have sponsors that are depending on you.
Right.
It's a stressful job when you realize all the outreach that you have.
I can see, too, by you saying it should be stressful, that your job should be challenging as
yes,
well.
Correct.
It should make you get up in the morning and think to yourself, okay, how am I going to meet these challenges?
If I don't think a job should keep you up at night 7 days a week.
Shouldn't be crippling
52
stress.
52 weeks a year.
Right.
But if one or two nights a month you can't sleep because you're thinking about a work problem, that means you have a really challenging, hard job. And when you solve the work problem,
mm-hmm.
you see, this is what people don't focus on. When you have a work problem that keeps you up or stresses you, you feel stressful and maybe a little not healthy. When you solve the problem and you achieve success, you have an overwhelming sense of like endorphins that make you feel that you succeeded and you accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you never get the wins and the success and all you have is the stress. That is bad stress.
Okay, so Tom Gimbel, CEO of LaSalle Network, what can bosses and managers do to help their employees and their team manage stress better?
So number one, make it fun. If you're going to be stressful, laugh a lot and learn how to enjoy it. Number two is, it's a buzzword and I get it, but we've been practicing this for 20 years at our company, is be your, we didn't used to call it this, but be your authentic self. We used to just call it back in the day, just be real. Be who you are. If you can't be the same person in the office that you are outside of the office, that's a huge part of your stress because you're trying to be two different people, right? Be one person. Be who you are. And if a manager isn't who they are, how can their staff be who they are, right?
We
mimic behaviors. And so if a boss is going through something personal outside of the office, they should share that with their staff so the staff knows that they're human. I'm getting divorced, or my grandmother got cancer, or my spouse lost their job, or my kid didn't get into the college they want to. Share that.
Now, I'm a little surprised you're saying this, but I'm guessing that you're saying share your things that are happening in your personal life within reason.
But me personally, I share probably 90% of it.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I encourage my man. I was dealing with a manager that I have now who's dealing with some personal things. And I said, have you told your staff? And he goes, not really. And I go, you should.
Because maybe the manager is being a little short or
they're being
a snappy.
They're being short, or B, they're not present when they're there. And all of a sudden, somebody views you as not caring versus they're more compassionate towards you because you have things going on. You need to humanize yourself. And whether you're 25 or 55, staff sees you how they see you. And we don't know how other people's brains work, but we do know this. We do know that people in general are compassionate. And if you tell them you have problems in your life, they will give you more rope. And the key is then how much rope you need and how much you take advantage of, and then it's a whole nother issue. But people are compassionate. They want to care about people.
So if you are managing a team, make sure that you're having fun while getting the work done.
Correct.
And then also be your authentic self so that you can lead by example.
Absolutely. Be vulnerable. Because how can you expect someone to share what's going on in their life if you don't share what's going on in your life? And if somebody on your team has something going on personally and they don't share it, they're going to act differently, and you're going to think they just don't like their job.
So Tom's company, LaSalle Network, made the list of great places to work from this American Psychological Association report. It's the 13th annual Stress in America report. They also said that politics and issues of healthcare and, of course, work was taking a toll on people. How do you kind of approach, you say, like, no politics in the office? What other approaches do you take?
This is such a tumultuous time with politics, and it's very hard if you have people who've been there for a short time. If you've been working with people for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you're not talking about things, I really question the relationship.
Because it's water cooler talk.
This is what you talk. You talk about it with your friends. You talk about it with coworkers. Should be your friends if you're at a place for 5 or 10 years.
I hope you enjoy the people you work
with.
I
hope so. Now, the problem is you get somebody who's been there for 6 months and they don't have the EQ of the workplace environment, of how, EQ being emotional intelligence, of how to really relate and talk about things. But, me personally and my company, I encourage people to talk about politics and respect each other's opinion. There are people, listen, whether it's 52 or 48 or whatever it is, between 40 and 50% of the country supports each side.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Right.
So just listen and try to understand why, and you can learn. If you're in a client interfacing situation, whether you're interviewing people or vendors or sponsors, you need to tolerate people who have different views. There's something wrong in the world right now.
Well, that's really good advice from Tom Gimbel, CEO of LaSalle Network, and congratulations on having a really
wonderful
place to work.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Do you throw pizza parties? Is that what... Also,
when I left, there were two huge pizza parties.
That's how you make sure that a company's having fun.
It's not the freshman 15, it's the LaSalle 15 when you join our company.
Thanks, Tom. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here for you now is top financial advisor Paul Pagnotto. Paul is a four-time ranked Forbes top wealth advisor. He's a really fascinating story. It's a unique journey from being a NASA scientist to a wealth advisor and now an entrepreneur. Hi, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you have a belief that transparency, and you mean complete transparency, has led to the growth of your business. I mean, and a lot of growth, billions of dollars in growth.
Yes. Transparency is the DNA of our company and our business. Today in society, we have abundance of everything. It could be abundance of education, abundance of natural resources, abundance of wealth. The world today has $320 trillion of wealth. What is needed, where the scarcity is today, is in trust. And trust and transparency go hand in hand. The companies that are flourishing today are the companies that have taken transparency to a whole new level in their respective market or industry.
So complete transparency, according to you, is a value proposition. But why has it been so difficult for a lot of companies, I mean, not just companies, governments, to achieve complete transparency? What's the obstacles and why aren't more people doing it?
It's one of the hardest things for a human being to do is to be completely transparent, because we feel vulnerable. We feel that other people may be judging us. We may be fearing unintended consequences. It's people, it's individuals like you and me that are working at these companies, that are running the companies, that are working for the governments, that are running governments. And it's fear. If you think about it, going back 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, humans survived by not being transparent, right? We hid in the bush away from a lion to survive. And now, in a short period of time, in a decade, we're being asked to be fully transparent. It's being demanded upon us to be fully transparent. So it takes a tremendous amount of courage to let go and be vulnerable. But when we are transparent and we completely seek the flourishing of others, we have exponential results.
So how do you tie in? I think you manage over $4.8 billion in assets.
Yes.
So how do you really tie in the fact that you are so transparent at your firm with the growth? Because I think you said it propelled you from $1 billion to now over $4.8.
We have done a number of things to integrate transparency throughout our organization and throughout the relationships of every client that we work with. So it started with creating a set of transparency standards. So we took a step back and we identified conflicts of interest. We identified areas that are frequently not transparent in the financial industry. And we created 10 standards that strip out those conflicts and provide pure, clean advice to individuals. We then took a look at our terms. And, you know, when you provide a service or you engage with a company for a service, if the terms are so complicated, you feel like you need to be an attorney to understand and read it, that's a red flag. So we made our terms like ridiculously simple for a client to work with us. They pay us one fee, they know exactly what the fee is, and every 3 months, we let them know what that fee is. And then it's accountability. We not only hold ourselves accountable, but these 10 transparency standards we created, we give them to the Securities Exchange Commission. We give them to the SEC, and the SEC hold us accountable to it. So it ranges from the standards that we've created, the terms with our clients, we have transparent costs with our clients, and super, super high level of accountability.
Well, Paul, I wish that this level of complete transparency was the business norm, but it sounds like you are revolutionizing the business with your six T's, standing for transparency of exponential transparency. And you've outlined all of this in your book. It's called Transparency Wave, Exponential Changes That Will Transform Our World. I believe that it's going to be available next month, right?
Yes. March 24th is the official release date. It can be available on Amazon, local bookstores. There's an audio version. There's a digital version. However, people would like to receive that information in the book.
Well, thank you so much to Paul Pagnotto. Really appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
G here with the Winterest Business Lunch. Happy Friday. You've almost made it to the end of the day and the weekend. Here for you now is Seamus Toomey. He is the editor-in-chief and co-founder of Block Club Chicago, which is a wonderful source for hyper-local neighborhood news. Hi, Seamus.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm so glad that you're in studio. It's been a little while. I wanted to follow up on something really quick, a little personal business.
Hit me.
Your 9-year-old daughter received AirPods, Apple AirPods, for Christmas this past December. Does she still have them?
She still has them.
Oh, fantastic.
I remember last time I was here, you sort of looked at me sideways when I told you that a 9-year-old was getting AirPods. But listen, these are sort of life-changing devices because every other headphones were breaking, all the cheap Disney ones, the Frozen ones. So
nice.
These ones work. I haven't had a complaint about the cords broken or anything like that.
Great.
So she's been very responsible.
No.
Kelly, nice job.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Okay, so you've got some real estate news for me. We're going to keep it to local real estate happenings. And the first one is 900 new apartments in Fulton Market. We were actually talking with a Chicago Tribune columnist earlier about the huge influx of apartments being built downtown. But you know of 900 apartments in the Fulton Market neighborhood.
Yeah, it's really incredible. The whole West Loop Fulton Market area is just booming so fast. It's hard for us to keep track. When our reporters, Mauricio Pena, our reporter in the West Loop, he'll tell us about it. And I said, well, didn't you write about that yesterday? He said, no, this is another 27-story hotel going up. It's really incredible. I tell everyone, like, in 5 years, you're not going to recognize it. It's going to look like when you're going down the Kennedy, you remember, you know, everything's only on your east. Well, now everything is going to be balanced out to the west as well. It's quite incredible.
This is definitely when you're turning into your parents and you hear yourself saying, how much more can go in that neighborhood? It just doesn't look the same as it did when I first was here.
I already do that because my cousin's father-in-law owned a meat store on Randolph not that long ago in the 90s. And I sound like an old man. Like, when I used to work at that meat store on Fulton Market, now it's a... You know, now it's a 5-star restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unrecognizable. I just don't know how much more can be packed into the Fulton Market neighborhood, but it's going to happen.
So the one that's happening today, and it's actually in front of the city's plan commission now, they're deciding it. It's a 49-story tower at 725 West Randolph, which, to put that in perspective, that is right alongside the Kennedy. It's right where Randolph breaks off and becomes the Kennedy right there. So this will be the tallest building west of the Kennedy down there. So it will be, if it gets approved and goes up in the next couple of years, it will be a very recognizable building.
And as construction is going on, of course, there's going to be some detours with traffic. And I know a lot of residents and folks that work in the neighborhood always feel as though it makes their commute even more difficult.
Right. The people that move into that neighborhood and thought that they might be able to park on the street.
Never again.
Or dead wrong. It's all becoming residential as well, and metered parking. It is one of the hardest neighborhoods in the world to park in right now.
So let's move north to Uptown, which is the neighborhood that I live in. There's a lot happening in Uptown. Some, a lot good, some bad.
Right. I mean, Uptown, you know, when Mayor Emanuel came in 8 years ago or 9 years ago, he really put a focus on let's get Uptown's entertainment district revived and use that as a catalyst to really help things.
Because historically, that was the entertainment district.
It's stunning when you walk down there, and if you can try to picture in your head what this would have looked like when the Uptown Theater was at its peak. And you know, the Aragon's obviously still there, and it's getting a little bit of a rebirth or a touching up of the outside, and the Riv is there. But if the Uptown Theater itself ever happens, and it's supposed to, it's still on track for sometime later this year or next to really get the construction going. It could be a really big boom to bring other businesses down there and really, you know, help the folks living around there.
And what are the specs of this build out? It's going to be apartments as well, too. Isn't it?
Right. So this is not the Uptown, but just down the street a little bit.
Double Door.
The Double Door is planning on moving.
Yeah, that's what I meant. The Double Door.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
The Double Door is...
Which used to be a venue in Wicker Park.
Used to be a historic venue in Wicker Park.
Saw many a show there.
Just a fantastic spot with
many
the,
two late nights at the Double Door.
And they, you know, they had a falling out with their landlord. Landlord recognized how valuable some of the property in Wicker Park was going to be. So Double Door got pushed out in 2017. They've been rumors of them relocating bunch of different places, maybe Logan Square. Then all of a sudden, they popped up in Uptown. This is place is called the Wilson Avenue Theater. It hasn't been used in years. It used to be a vaudeville house. And the plan now, they're going to hopefully, they haven't locked this down yet, but the Double Door is planning on moving in there sometime in the coming years. And the developer who's working on the project now wants to build a big apartment building right next door to it, with like 110 apartments. This is it's at 1050 West Wilson. So it's quite interesting. If you really love the Double Door and you want to keep going back, you can live right next door to it. You know, just wake up, you know, roll out of bed and go right to a show.
Well, I like the way that sounds, but Seamus, if my rent goes up, I'm going to blame you. Now let's go all the way south to the Pullman neighborhood, and something really cool is happening there with high hopes that maybe the neighborhood is going to experience a rebirth.
Right, you know, right on the same preservation tone here as Uptown, Pullman. Everyone's known all along that the Pullman Historic District is a gem. It's just been sitting there waiting to have some life pumped back into it, because it's all very intact. All of the old red brick buildings that George Pullman mm-hmm. built as a planned community, you know, over 100 years
Love
ago.
The history there.
Yeah, I mean, with just like the different, the row houses and then the homes, it's sort of depending on what job you had in the company, you got the bigger house, mm-hmm. all centered around the Hotel Florence, as well as the historic clock tower, which burned in the 90s. If you remember back 5 years ago, this week, President Obama designated it a national monument and really started helping pump dollars into it to restore that clock tower. So yesterday, or 2 days ago, was the fifth anniversary. They had a big celebration down there to show off what they've done so far. They're building a visitor center in the clock tower. A lot of the exterior has been preserved already. So they're really trying to turn around. It's going to take years. It's like a $56 million project with some private funding and some city funding in it. But it's, again, same thing, trying to bring people who aren't used to going to Pullman into the neighborhood, hoping some of those dollars spill out into the neighborhood because they could use the help.
Well, Seamus, that sounds like all good news to us. Thanks for that real estate roundup. Seamus Toomey, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Block Club Chicago. Check out their website, blockclubchicago.com. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.